Welcome back, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook podcast. If you've enjoyed following along, feel free to subscribe and hit that five-star rating for us. On today's show, we have Coach Robbie Graham from George Rogers Clark. We get into a whole wide array of items not touched on in most clinics or chalk talks, so I hope you can take a little something away. Enjoy. Joining us today is the head coach of the GRC Cardinals, Robbie Graham. Coach Graham has established himself as one of the most respected and revered coaches in girls basketball in the state of Kentucky. He has won 5 regional titles as a head coach and has been a part of 10 regional championships through his career. He is also the kind of coach I would love my kid to play for someday. Coach Graham, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you, Coach. I'm looking forward to it, and I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, for sure. Even when I first got started, you were just somebody that – I was very young and didn't know a lot of people, but you were extremely kind of just really warm and just kind of overly willing to help. And I never forgot, I think about this a lot with my kids, but, people forget what you tell them and different things, but people never forget how you make them feel. And so
that's exactly right, Coach. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you're good. And I just never forgot that. So you're just kind of one of those people, man.
Well, I appreciate that, and I remember when we first kind of met and talked basketball, and someone was there for me, when I was a young coach, and I feel like it's kind of a responsibility as we get older to kind of lend a hand and help out young coaches, and hopefully that just continues because we're all in the same boat, and we're all trying to learn and get better and be the best we can be.
Yeah, for sure, and I'm not under 30 anymore, so I'm starting to feel that old guy stuff. Right. It was nice being the young coach, but that's all right. Through this podcast that we've touched on a number of topics, and today I kind of want to hit on a wide range of things, and hopefully everybody can get something from that. You've got experience as an assistant, coach on the boys' side, and you've been a successful head coach, on the girls' side, and so I figured we could really dig in to a lot of different topics that maybe people don't normally see in a chalk talk or a clinic but things that are pretty important. So just kind of throwing this out there off the bat, what kind of defense do you hate going against the most? Okay. And let's talk about why.
Well, probably the junk defenses, your boxing ones and triangles and twos, because you just don't see it very often. So therefore it's just hard to put in your practice plan to prepare for it. And, you'll scout teams and they don't do it against other teams, then you play them and they throw it in. So it's kind of, they say to run your man stuff against that or run your zone stuff, whatever. But it's just different when the kids don't see that on a regular basis. So I'd probably say the junk defenses would probably be the biggest thing I hate going against. Also, I will add the teams that mix it up, they'll play man dispossession or zone dispossession or trap dispossession. Those are teams that are difficult to play as well because – your offense has to be very aware and you got to have a really, strong, smart point guard that can adjust. Cause, sometimes as a coach, we're trying to relay what we see, but you got to have that point guard on the floor that's relaying to the kids. And, the one thing though about playing those teams that play multiple defenses, usually they're not great defensive teams. That's why they play so many different defenses, try to disguise, some weaknesses. So, you can attack those kind of teams, but that junk defense, Coach, I despise it. I hate playing against the junk defenses.
Yeah, and like you said, I think, especially you see a box, you see a triangle, and you see a couple guys that are in a zone. And so I think our natural tendency is, okay, let me run my zone stuff. And, your zone hitters, and things, they require you to screen a certain guy in the zone. And, one thing I've found is it's just really hard for my kids without having, repped it and seen it in film and, okay, which guy do I screen? Okay, now that there's 2 people down here instead of 3, what does this look like? And, think it just changes things a little bit. And your players have to be more kind of, you have to be, if you're going to try to run some of that stuff, you have to be, I think, more prepared. And, I think the biggest thing is you just tell them, don't hesitate, get to a screen, get to it, and make up for it with effort, if nothing else. But, the one thing you've got going for you is, if some team is trying to junk it up, usually you feel like you may have a little bit maybe better of a team and, hopefully your players can make plays and overcome that, is the idea. So I don't know, but when the team that's kind of level with you plays it, it's kind of a, kind of a whole new ball game. For me, one thing I really hate going against teams that kind of just run around and just kind of trap at random. You know, just kind of, you know, I think of kind of like a Mercy. I think of, sometimes some of Franklin County does, they just kind of force your, you're not going to be able to run anything. And no. So you better be okay. And you better not be close fisted against those teams. And that's one thing I've had to kind of overcome as a coach who likes to run a lot of stuff is, you know, you got to get to a point where you say, okay, they're just not going to let us run anything. And that's fine. Let's just get kids in the right spots, then let them make a play. And usually you can find easier buckets than in anything else when teams do that kind of stuff if you get your kids in the right spots.
Yeah, definitely, Coach. I would agree with that. And like you said, Mercy, God, they're tough to play against Franklin County with all the trapping and stuff. And, usually if you can make, the first pass is tough, the second pass. But if you can get to the third and fourth pass against those kind of teams, that's when you're looking at a wide open three or a layup, just ball movement. Because, eventually those teams will break down if you'll just be patient and you can handle it, for the first few, two or three passes.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing. And, so when you know you're going against a team like that, do you think it's more important to, I think it's kind of hard to maybe replicate what they do. What do you do when you're preparing for a team like that? Is it more film work? Is it more, just kind of organized chaos and practice?
A little bit of both. We'll watch film and just kind of see where their traps are coming from. What we're going to look for, too, is who are their strong trappers. We want to try to stay away from the Jinx of the world with the long athletic bodies. And, if we can attack, some of the smaller, not as athletic players. And, also we in practice also we'll run six or seven out there and, we'll let the defense be very aggressive and not worry about necessarily calling them any fouls and not have the offense be, really strong. And, we do some drill work where it's 5-on-4. Five defensive, four offensive, and the four offensive have to complete 10 passes. And, if they don't complete 10, there's some punishment for not completing 10. And, the five defenders just have a lot of freedom to do whatever, just don't hurt each other for sure. But I think that's helped. That helps with ball toughness and, handling the ball pressure and the strong traps.
I think that's really good. Something else, I think it's good to go in with, I think you've got to have your kids confident in a plan of attack when you're going against those guys. But then I think you also have to have that plan B that you've also repped and prepared for. I think we underestimate how much our kids can handle at times as far as, I want them, all in on the game plan. Like I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. I'm not trying to hide anything. We want our kids to know, hey, this is what we're doing. And we'll talk about it. This is where we're going to attack them. Okay. We're going to try it this way. If this doesn't work, this is what we're going to do. And I think it just gives them that sense of confidence because they go into the game and they're confident in the plan, but they also know, if things don't go well, you're not shell-shocked and they're not kind of panicking.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, Coach. Yeah, that's a great assessment there for sure.
Let's hit on press break. Obviously we can't draw up like a specific press break, but let's talk about like philosophy and implementation. So how many press breaks do you have, or do you have just one that you maybe – change alignments out of? So let's start there.
Okay, we have one probably main press break that we can change alignments out of. And when I was with the boys at Fleming County, we went down, to Memphis, and it was called the Memphis Showboat Classics, kind of the, AAU back at that time, some years back, so I'm not going to date myself. It was more you're with your high school team more than you were with actually your AAU team in the summer. So they had a really big showdown down there, and we went down and we were watching. It was two Kentucky teams actually playing. Graves County boys with Alan Hatcher, PRP with Dale Mabry, and PRP traditionally would press the crap out of you from, start to finish, 84 feet all over. And, at this particular time, Graves County had a very non-athletic team. PRP was full of athletes, and they just torched them with press breaks. So we actually talked to afterward, Coach Kelly and I, and got the information from him about his press break. So I've used that ever since. So that's, dating myself way back, but it's got multiple options. And we can change alignments, disguise, but we're still basically doing the same thing. And, kind of each pass has a different option. So if it goes here, we're doing this, if it goes there, we're doing that. And, we've done that for several years. And, so it's been really, really good to us. And we got some stuff late game that we'll go to, one thing, if we're up late game, we want to get the ball into our best free throw shooter's hands. So we've got some of those things that we'll go to late game. But for the most part, We have one really, really, you know, strong press break that has multiple options, and we can change the lineups out of it. You know, that's kind of what we kind of hang our hat on that one, and we rep it quite a bit. And the kids know where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be. And, you know, if they take this option away, then they know we have this option. If they take that one away, they know we have this option. So it's been good to us, and we try to, you know, over the years, just stick with that.
So it doesn't matter if they're zone press and man press and same break.
Yeah, same break. And it's actually designed to handle 1-2-1-1 or 2-2-1, you know, 1-2-2-3 quarter court. It's kind of, you know, designed, not my design at all, Coach. I've actually, you know, like I said, we stole it. But it's worked against kind of everything we've gone against. And, you know, if it's man, you know, it'll work to get it in bounds. And, you know, the biggest thing, too, what we try to do, get it to our best player and get the heck out of the way. You know, that's, you know, I'm not going to try to overthink or overcoach. You know, let's let our players make plays. And, you know, we've been fortunate enough to have some really good ball handlers and some high IQ kids, you know, that can handle it and get to where it needs to be. So, you know, at the end of the game, you know, bottom line, get the ball to our best player and get the heck out of the way.
Yeah, I like that. So do you spend more time with like certain teams and certain years on press break and practice? You know, just kind of do you look at your team and go, you know, well, maybe we need to spend more time depending on regional opponents, or how do you evaluate what time to put into your press break?
Well, we do. One thing that's with probably our experience, you know, when we, you know, there's years where we've been really, really young and not had a lot of kids that have gone through our system, you know, so obviously we teach, you have to teach a lot more with those kids. Years where we've had a lot of experience, you know, we haven't had to spend as much time as they know. You know, it's like I said, we touch base with it in our middle schools. You know, they get a variation of it, not as many options, and don't get as detailed as we do once they get to the varsity level. But our middle school runs it, you know, our freshman team, our JV, and then, like I said, our varsity also runs it. So they're getting a little taste of it as they come through. So the more experience we have, you know, we don't have to spend as much time on it because, like I said, the kids just know. But with our, you know, years where we're really young, and we'll hammer it and work it, put more time in on it.
That's good. Last kind of thing with press break. Do you have any, like, audibles? Now, you may not want to share it, and I don't blame you if you do, but – do you have any audibles, you know, that you kind of maybe go to, you know, a verbal cue, and you don't have to tell us what, but a verbal cue, maybe a hand gesture or something that can give your guys a quick, you know, whether you don't have a timeout or, you know, maybe the other team's shooting a free throw and you know you're about to get pressed. Do you have anything like that?
We do. You know, we'll try to mix it up. Some years it's a verbal audible, and then some years it's a physical gesture. Not going to reveal those, obviously, Coach. We do, you know, especially if we see something we think we can get to right now, then we'll have that audible call or that quick gesture to get there in a hurry and take advantage of a situation that we think we see.
Yeah, that's good. And, you know, the biggest thing that I would say is, you know, it's little things like this, you know, people always remember there's a million plays through the course of a game that can get you beat or that can win you a game. But people just remember what happens at the end. And, you know, I just think it's so important I think it's important to spend time and to be, you know, like really prepared in the biggest moments on the biggest stages. And, you know, those are usually the end of game stuff. And, you know, I mean, how many times has a game come down to, you know, you've got to get the ball in bounds. You know, and the more prepared you are and the more things that you can do and do well, I think in those situations, I think the more you kind of set yourself up to avoid a disaster, maybe not, you know, make a hero play, but just to keep your team from, you know, falling into certain things. So I think it's a good idea. We're kind of the same boat as far as having some, you know, it's usually late game specials, you know, to get the ball to a certain person or, you know, to go along, whatever. That we have. So I would just encourage you, if you don't have one, to get one or get with a coach that you know pretty well that would be willing to share some of that stuff with you.
Absolutely. I totally agree, Coach.
Let's shift gears and talk about the other side and talk about pressing. We've both done a fair share with certain teams at certain times. You know, let me get you've hit on you being an old coach. Do you think it's harder to press now, maybe more so than 10 years ago?
Probably a little bit. The reason being, you know, the old positionless basketball, you know, we've gone away from, you know, a center, two forwards, and, you know, guard. You know, a lot of times you'll play, you know, teams that have five kids on the floor that can handle the ball. You know, so obviously it's hard to press those kind of teams. So I would think so a little bit, you know, with all the individual instruction and, you know, kids are doing, going to these personal trainers and, you know, their ball handling has improved. And, you know, so a lot of teams, like I said, will have five kids that can handle the ball. So I think that makes it a little bit tougher, but still, I think, you know, you want to speed kids up, you know, you want them to make decisions, quickly. You know, a lot of times kids can't do that. And, you know, we just put them in, awkward positions, you know, for our press. And, you know, we've kind of used different presses in the past, you know, where 2-2-1 is kind of what we, you know, kind of get our main press, I guess. You know, we want to kind of slow you down, not necessarily turn you over, just kind of slow you down and maybe catch you in a bad situation, you know, where you can catch it in the coffin corner. We can get a good trap and then deny the passes out of there and maybe get a deflection or still going the other way. And, you know, we've used some, you know, some 1-2, 1-1 where we're quick trap. And, you know, we've also face guard and, you know, try to run a trap a little bit. So, you know, throughout the course of my coaching, we've done a little bit of everything. Probably 2-2-1 is probably, you know, what we've done the most. And like I said, it's more a slowdown is more than, you know, with an opportunity, you know, trapping opportunity, we'll take it, but it's not necessary to turn you over immediately.
You know, one thing I've found is, you know, I think when you play the better, obviously when you play the better teams and the best teams, they're harder to press. You know, they've got multiple guys who can really handle it and ultimately kind of make you – they just can make you pay. When you press, I think, at the end of the day, if you want to press, you better ask yourself, are we going to get more out of it than we're going to give up in it? And if you think you will, then I think you go ahead and you press and you get after it. But I find it really hard in the biggest moments against the best teams. I find it hard to press, and there's a few reasons for that. One is the personnel on the other side. But the other thing is, you know, our sport, unlike any other – the playing surface changes in the biggest moments. You know, we go from playing on high school floors all year, then all of a sudden when your season's on the line, now the floor's new. And anybody can say it may not matter, but they're lying, because with the floor being that much longer, you've got a lot more room to run under mistakes. Balls that would have been, you know, ball, you know, when the floor's a little tighter, it makes those passes a little closer that you can make, you know, you can kind of run through some lanes and stuff. I've just found it's been really, really hard to press on the big floor against really good teams.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, Coach. You know, we don't play our region, you know, on the college length floor. But, you know, when we've got to state tournament and playing on the bigger floor, there's definitely a difference. It's longer runs for your traps, you know, so when you have longer runs, it gives the offense more opportunity, quicker opportunities to get rid of the ball before you get there on the trap. So I think so, that's definitely so. And, you know, that's one of the things too, that we really, you know, work really hard on our man defense, you know, because postseason play, I just think possessions become more important, and, you know, you just don't want to give up any easy baskets against good teams. So, you know, I think everybody kind of gets concerned a little bit, you know, when it comes tournament time. And, you know, the pressing is, you know, not as, you know, you don't press as often as you would in the season, I think. And, you know, especially like you said, when, you know, once you get, you know, on the big court and you guys play your regional tournament, you know, on the college league court, you know, it is tough, you know, and with the competition you guys play, I definitely see where it'd be tough to press some of those teams with the athletes and the players they have.
Yeah. With that being said, though, what presses have you seen be the most effective in tournament play?
Well, like I said, we're 2-2-1 because there's not a lot of gambling. I think it's, you know, more, it's a solid press. And just to kind of get you, like, slow you down and, you know, get you to think a little bit. And like I said, if we can catch you slipping and making a mistake and, you know, get that ball on the sideline or a coffin corner, we can get a quick trap. And, you know, then we want to take the next two passes away. And then we got our basket protector. You know, we can just get a deflection or something. And just to get you to think a little bit, you know, I think that's what we've had success with, you know, as far as I'm concerned in the past with the 2-2-1.
Okay. We'll shift gears again. Let's talk about blob offense and blob defense. So baseline out of bounds, how much time do you put into your blob D? So like defending baseline out of bounds plays, or do you even talk about it much? So what's your philosophy on like baseline out of bounds defense?
We talk about it some, you know, the blob D&O is probably one of my weakest areas. I need to do a better job of that. And, you know, the older I get, I've gotten a little bit better. But as a young coach, I was like, come on, let's throw a couple plays out there and just don't let them score. That used to be my philosophy. We've talked about it a little more. We work on it. We try to keep you from going, you know, our baseline out of bounds. We try to keep players from cutting to the basket. You know, if you're going away from the basket, you know, we're fine with you going away from the basket. Because obviously most people are trying to get a layup. So we want to work really, really hard on being physical and keep you from cutting to the basket and try to keep you from getting to your screens or keep you from, you know, setting your screens. So we do a defensively work harder on it. Defensively do offensively. Offensively, I just think, you know, teams, especially the good teams are so good. It's just tough to score against those really good teams like playing a, you know, Mercer County and a Souter, you know, or, you know, Faust and Butler or Murray at the time. You know, it's just tough to get baskets against those kind of teams. And, you know, so we're more of, you know, we don't want to turn it over. So if we can't score, I mean, let's just get it in bounds. We'll run our stuff to try to get a bucket that way. But, you know, it's probably something I need to do a better job of. In the last couple of years, we've worked harder on blob O and blob D.
Do you have the same alignment for all of them, for all your baseline bounds plays?
You know, 2 years ago, we didn't used to. We ran some box, some diamonds, just different sets. But, you know, I found some stuff from Belmont, and they run a lot of stuff out of diamond. And basically, they run all their stuff out of a diamond look. So we've kind of changed what we're doing as far as baseline out of bounds. And, you know, so everything's kind of out of the same alignment. And we can do multiple things out of that alignment.
That's good stuff. You know, one thing I'll share, you know, I don't care to share. I think for us, you know, I've always kind of been a pack line coach, and it doesn't matter if we got great athletes or not. But that's another talk for another day. One thing for us, and we're super stingy, you know, I don't care if kind of the same way. I don't care if you get it in. We just don't want to let you score. So we just kind of try to stay away from everybody. And then the one thing I'll say that's been the best thing I've done since coaching as far as this kind of situational stuff, when teams run box sets, we will not go near the elbows. I mean, we will not guard the elbows. I think that's the number one place that people create confusion, and I think there's a lot of good. To me, based on balance, one of the hardest things to defend because your back is to the basketball, so to speak.
Absolutely.
And so I just think teams can take advantage, and we definitely try to take advantage. So defensively, you know, we found that when we don't go near those guys at the elbows, when people go to look to screen, they don't know where to go to screen, and they end up kind of just not really getting anything out of it. So rarely have people been able to kind of score or run their stuff out of a box when we've done that. So just something to think about for folks out there.
Yeah, when we were on the Zoom call, you know, with you, you know, a few weeks ago, I took note of that, and we're definitely going to implement that. You know, that's, you know, I really like that, you know, what you're talking about and that philosophy as far as not guarding the elbows and kind of just muck it up and clog it up in there. And so we're definitely moving toward that as we go next season.
But what's your philosophy on sideline out of bounds? So I've kind of gone back and forth on having some slob sets through the years. You know, what do you think there? I think the one thing is you better have a good one to get it in bounds late. If nothing else, if you don't do anything else with slob, I think you just at least better have something to get it in late. What do you think?
Yeah, and we focus on a more late game than we do throughout the course of the game. Because, you know, I just find out a lot of people just don't guard your side out of bounds, you know, or you're seeing the zone. And, you know, we've got a little sideline out of bounds that'll work against a man or zone. But we definitely, if it's a late game, we've got some stuff to go to late game for sure. And philosophy-wise, defensively on slab, is, you know, we back off. You know, we're not going to let you, you know, we're supposed to back off. Now, a lot of times the girls will fall asleep without denying, but we just want to keep you in front of us, let you get it in bounds, and we're going to guard you. We don't want to give up any buckets from sideline out of bounds. I think that's just ludicrous if you fall asleep and give a bucket there on sideline.
Yeah, definitely. The thing I enjoy when teams put someone on the ball, sideline out of bounds, I think there's a lot of good, easy stuff you can get when teams go on ball slob. And I think it's a good time just to have a special, you know, a lot of we pretty much all of our like late game stuff or sideline stuff or, you know, baseline stuff, we've got the initial action, but we can just whatever special. And we just call it special. You know, we just say, all right, let's run 11 special. Let's run ear special, whatever it is. And then we've just kind of got a nice counter based on a certain way they may be playing it. And that's something that you can, as your team gets, you've been there for years, you can add those layers. But something else somebody told me once that you know, it's food for thought, and I really liked it, was they said, you know, if you can run your baseline out of bounds stuff over on the sideline, you know, and
never thought about that, Coach.
Yeah, I didn't either. That's, you know,
interesting.
And then I started thinking about some of our baseline out of bounds plays, and I thought, okay, like, yeah, you know, and we could definitely, you know, like, especially your baseline out of bounds plays where you're just trying to get it in, well, we could run that same thing up from the side and as a way to get it in, you know, maybe if you know, and it just happens. You know, okay, it's late game. We got to get it in sideline, and there's a deflection. Well, great. They just saw our get it in play, and now you know they're kind of ready to take that away. You know, or maybe they fouled twice. They had some to give, and now it's like, okay, now they're all over where we're trying to get it in. You know, it's just another thing that you don't have to put in a whole new play that, you know, if you work on with your kids, you might be able to do. So I always thought that was good food for thought.
Definitely, definitely.
Last little topic here. What's your thought on holding the ball late in games? You know, when is it too early? And do you have a specific call or a specific offense for this?
Well, I'm probably the worst guy at holding the ball. I just, if I'm up 4, I want to be up 8. If I'm up 8, I want to be up 12. You know, what we do is, you know, I don't want to say we hold the ball. We do probably get more patient and we're looking for certain things. You know, like if you know, we'll definitely take a layup, you know, if we got it. And, you know, I'm not going to tell my 40% 3-point shooter, you know, if we're up, you know, 3, if he catches it wide open, you know, I want him to have the confidence to let it fly. Now, my 10% 3-point shooter, if you shoot it, I'm probably going to come off the bench and get a technical foul and get ejected, you know. But we want to stay aggressive, because I just think if you, you know, if you kind of hold the ball, I think that just the girls get relaxed and your players get relaxed, and, you know, it's kind of puts them in a different mode. That's just my mentality. I mean, you know, and my mentors have always kind of been the same way. I guess it's, you know, it depends on who you learn from and who you work with. And, you know, we're always, we want to keep going. Now, like I said, we don't go as play as fast or as aggressive, but we're still trying to score the basketball and take easy baskets. You know, we just get a little more patient and try to execute a little bit better.
Sure thing. All right, Coach, last segment, I'm going to throw a full court press on you. All right, I'm going to ask you a series of rapid fire questions. You have 10 seconds or less to answer, all right?
Gotcha.
All right, does high school need a shot clock?
I think so, for sure.
Okay, first high school coach to say that. Up 3 with 8 seconds left and the ball's at half court. Are you fouling or are you playing it out?
Depends on who we're playing. We've done it both ways.
Okay. Favorite high school gym in Kentucky aside from your own, which is now the mecca of high school basketball?
I'll probably say the Mason County Fieldhouse. We've had a lot of success there. You know, played there, coached there. So probably the Mason County Fieldhouse.
Good stuff. Least favorite person to coach against?
Wyatt Faust, Chris Souther.
Favorite basketball memory as a head coach?
Winning the 2014 regional championship, which was my first. My daughter was a player on that team, so it's probably my best coaching memory.
Watched that team at the state tournament. I was a young coach, and you guys ran the Wildcat defense, and she was all over the place. And your daughter, I was like, my gosh. I was like, I don't know what I do. I don't think I'd ever score against that defense. So that was a fun team to watch for sure. Best place to eat in Winchester?
We have a restaurant called Blue Isle. It's a kind of hometown, family-owned. A couple of our kids in the past have graduated. Their parents own it. So if you're ever in Winchester, stop by Blue Isle.
Oh, man. All right, Coach. Hey, I really appreciate everything. Thanks for sharing your wisdom with us, and we're a lot better for having you on.
Coach, thank you. You know, I have a ton of respect for you. Thank the world of you, and, you know, all that you do, greatly appreciate it. And it's always great talking to you, you know, even podcasts or if it's just you and I talking one-on-one. So I appreciate you and your friendship.
Absolutely. Thank you, Coach.
All right, brother.
See ya.
For Coach Graham, this has been Wyatt Faust, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook Podcast. Join us again next Thursday as we have Coach Donna Moyer from Sacred Heart on to discuss sustaining success in late game situations. Until then, keep getting better.